On this week's edition of the Arizona Media Podcast, where we go in depth and we go through process, not so much about the game or the teams, but more about what this person does day in and day out through the course of their broadcast career. We've had Jude LaCava, we've had Dave Pasch, we've had Ron Wolfley, and it's a real pleasure to have Al McCoy with us, the Hall of Famer, who this Friday night is going in the Ring of Honor, and rightly so, before the Suns take on, or actually during, is it before or halftime, Al? Do you know yet, against Oklahoma City?
Well, the actual ceremony, Brad, is at halftime.
All right. And so congratulations on that, and thanks for coming on the Arizona Media Podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and my pleasure.
You are in Memphis today. You have a day off as we tape this. So what does a day off for a play-by-play guy entail? How much work, how much decompression, rest up?
Well, actually, when you get a day off, you try to get as much rest as you can. And that means maybe you can sleep in a little bit later in the morning. And gives you a little more preparation time for the team that the Suns are going to be playing, which in case, as you mentioned, is Memphis here tomorrow night. So it doesn't happen that often. But we kind of relish these days off when you're on the road with an NBA team. It's catch-up time in more ways than one.
Sure. So last night, or yesterday afternoon, you were in Milwaukee, and you finished the game. I'm assuming you left after the game last night. If you could take the fans kind of through what that process is like from end of game to next day and the hours and all of that.
Yeah, well, it was a day game. It was a 2:30 game in Milwaukee. And when the game is over, we, of course, in the broadcast area, wait for the players to have their time off, to have their dinners in the locker room and get dressed and ready. And when that is all taken care of, and that usually takes quite a while, the rest of us are waiting on the bus, and then we head for the airport. And it was a very rough flight coming into Memphis, which isn't really what you enjoy if you've been spending a lot of time in airplanes, but it was really rough for about 20 minutes coming in. But by the time that we got to our hotel, and then you wait for the bags, they come in on a separate truck from the airport. And I think by the time maybe that I got up to my room, it probably was close to 10 o'clock. I know I did turn on the television and was able to watch the tail end of the Oscars. Mm-hmm. So even though it was a day game, it was almost a two-hour flight to get down here to Memphis. And then by the time you get your bags, get in your room, time flies by. And so now here it is, and a day off, which, as I said, you look forward to.
And then tomorrow, you'll have a game, and you're also leaving. This is not a baseball play-by-play situation where you're in a city for 3 days, 4 days, 2 days. It's not a football situation where you fly in for one night and you're on the game, usually right after it's over. That said, your day tomorrow, is it hectic because you have shoot-arounds? Well, I'll let you take us through what tomorrow will look like for you, right down to when you put your head on the pillow in Phoenix.
Yeah, well, normally I try and set aside a couple of hours that I will spend specifically on preparation. Other than that, it's getting up, having a bite to eat, and then repacking. As you can well imagine, most of our time on the road is unpacking and then repacking. Mm-hmm. So you kind of decide what you're going to be wearing to the game because you'll be leaving on the airplane, won't have an opportunity to change. So, and then you kind of repack and get your bags ready. And then after lunchtime, as I said, I always try and set aside a couple of hours to spend specifically on the opponent, and that opponent will be the Memphis Grizzlies. Very, very good team. The Suns have lost to twice this year. And maybe make a few phone calls. Usually check and see if the engineering help is all ready and going to be at the arena to handle our broadcast. And then just going over what has Memphis done of late. What did the Suns do against Memphis in the last two games? and just kind of a general preparation thing, getting ready for the game, making some notes of things you might want to point out during the course of the broadcast.
Who do you talk to from the other team? Or do you go off of just public relations person? Do you go in and visit with the coach or the assistant coaches, the broadcaster, all the above? Or do you have a certain routine, Al, that you go through in preparation for the other team?
Well, most of that during the day is done with statistics that have been forwarded to you, both by the Suns PR department and the Memphis PR department. And then, obviously, we can get on our iPhone and pick up the NBA information that we might need. And then the last-minute stuff is when you get to the arena. I usually try and get there at least 2 hours before broadcast time, and that's when you get your last-minute information from the opposing coach, from the opposing locker room. And then I always do a pregame interview for our pregame show with Coach Earl Watson. And so we set up that with him, and then you talk with the respective trainers, who's hurting, who is not hurting, who's playing. And those are the things, the last-minute things that you do once you get to the arena. Then I have my standard is I like to get to my broadcast location at least a half hour before we go on the air. And then I have the opportunity to make my last-minute notes, do my last preparation, get all the statistics and the things that I might need, plus of the commercial drop-ins, which are so important,
right,
during the course of the game. So I try and get to my actual broadcast location, go over last-minute details with my engineer, and go over the last-minute preparation things for the broadcast. And then it's off and flying.
We're talking with the Hall of Fame broadcaster Al McCoy on the Arizona Media Podcast. He will be inducted into the Ring of Honor at halftime Friday night against Oklahoma City. How has the internet changed your preparation from when you first started to where you are today, Al?
Well, obviously, we have a lot more information available to us. I mean, back when I started doing the Suns game, I mean, first of all, I think there were, 16 teams then. There's now 30. And you just didn't have the access to information, obviously. And still today, you read all the newspapers, all the periodicals, the magazines, the articles. Preparation in the NBA is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, as we talked about the things you do the day of the game, et cetera, the preparation is really ongoing because you want to keep track of the league, the teams, who's doing what and where. So it is an ongoing situation. But obviously, with the use of computers and iPads and iPhones and the internet, much more information is available. And you need it because today the fans are so much more aware,
yep,
of everything that's taking place that you need that information to have at your fingertips.
How much is too much information? By that, I mean, are there numbers that you specifically through the years, shooting percentage, block shot, whatever it may be, that you feel like I have to work these within a broadcast, free throw percentage? Do you have some staples that you just have to use and you take a lot of the stuff and say, sometimes there's just too many numbers to throw at people?
Well, I'm not a statistics guy, Brad. I think you can overwhelm your audience, particularly doing radio. Now, doing television, you can put those things on the screen without saying them verbally, but I'm not a real guy that depends on a lot of statistics. I think you just kind of overload the broadcast and maybe burden the listener down a little too much. I mean, there are things that are important, and when we're setting the stage for the broadcast, I pick that time to go over some of the statistics as to how good the overall team is shooting, what their shooting percentages are as far as the field, three-point range, which is so important anymore, free throws, who their leading scorers are and what they shoot, et cetera. And that's really before the game. But during the game, I try not to overload the listener with a lot of statistics. Now, obviously, if it's a very important part of the game and an individual player's at the free throw line, we're going to tell you what he's shooting from the free throw line on the year. So you do those immediate statistics that the game actually dictates. But I don't try and overload the radio listener with a lot of statistics. I'm there to describe the game, mm-hmm. and to me that's the most important thing.
How do you work process in with your color analyst, Tim Kempton, and you mentioned your engineer a couple of times. I mean, it's really teamwork between the three of you, even though one of you will never hear that person. That person, though, is crucial. If your crowd microphone is too hot, if your microphone is lower than Tim's, talk about the three of you working together.
Well, I've been very fortunate because so many of our engineer producers, and we hire that individual in the various cities. We do not travel that individual as television travels a lot of people. We don't do that. But the majority of the engineer producers I've worked with for years, and they know me, they know my broadcast style, and they're really a big part of making it sound as good as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, getting on to the analyst, and in my case, it's Tim Kempton, of course, it's a tough job. And I think being an analyst in the NBA is tougher than any sport because the sport itself is so fast that you really have to pick your times to interject something that's going to be pertinent to that particular play or that game. I think Tim Kempton, who has obviously worked at it through the years, is one of the best. He does a very, very good job. And from my standpoint, I try and bring him in when I think it's something appropriate that he can contribute as an ex-player to that particular game or to that particular play. But being an analyst in an NBA radio broadcast is not easy. And as I said, I certainly congratulate Tim Kempton because he's worked at it. He's learned that he has to say things quickly, make his point in a hurry, not to take away from the actual play-by-play of the game. But it's not an easy job.
And you have to develop him, too. From day one, it wasn't easy. Can you talk about that process of working with Tim and how receptive he was and what you were looking for? Or maybe I'm dead flat wrong. Maybe it was just he was a natural.
Well, no, and I don't think Tim would object to me saying this. Obviously, as we know, he was a former player. He had an interest in broadcasting, and he had done some. And when he signed on as to be my a color analyst, I simply told him, I said, Tim, I said, you can be just another athlete that shows up and winds up not doing a very good job, or you can go to work and you can listen to broadcasts, you can pace yourself, you can prepare, and he's done that. And in fact, the first couple of years, he didn't do interviews, but then he started. He does an excellent interview now. Initially, he would write down every question he was going to ask. Initially, when he started, before the game, he would make a list of things he felt he could interject during the broadcast. So I certainly would say this for Tim Kempton, that he has worked at it and has become, I think, an excellent analyst. We all get a little too excited sometimes, and I think probably it's more difficult for a former player that has played the game in the NBA to not get too overexcited, but I like that. And as I said, it's a pleasure for me, and I enjoy working with Tim a great deal. I've had about 11 different broadcast partners through the last 45 years, and really, they've all been contributors. I've enjoyed working with every one of them.
Do you know how many are going to be there Friday night? Have you heard yet?
Or no, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Hall of Famer Al McCoy with us on the Arizona Media Podcast. Rulebook. I'm just curious, from when you started to where you are today, I like to tell when I go speak in classes, know your rule book, but the rule book becomes 20 pages, 40 pages, 100 pages, 200 pages. You've broadcast more than just basketball. You've done done hockey, you've done baseball, you've done a lot since I've been here for 23 years. I'm just curious, and staying up on rules, how to interject those, what the league does to help a broadcaster understand the rules. Do you have resources for all of that?
Well, at the start of each season, the NBA does put out a rule book which would list any changes or additions or interpretations that there might be. Some of these, quite frankly, are a little hard to decipher, mm-hmm. but obviously you go over them and try and make any adjustment to your audience that you think is going to be important to describing the game. You hope that there aren't a lot of changes, but there have been just changes in the way the game has been played in the NBA through the years, quite obviously. But obviously, you have to stay on top of the rules, and that's usually done prior to the start of the season. One thing that has been different, which is not really good for us as broadcasters, is the majority of the arenas in the NBA have changed our broadcast location.
Mm-hmm.
For years, we were always courtside in the majority of the arenas, and we still are in Phoenix, which I'm very grateful for. And with that, we had an opportunity to discuss things with the referees. And through the years, particularly the veteran referees, were always amiable to come over during a timeout. And if you had a question about a certain call, they would be more than happy to explain it. We don't have that opportunity now just because of the change in broadcast locations. And that really is harmful to our broadcast. But, you know, you do what you have to do. But the rules, again, you try and interpret as best as you can. Sometimes that's difficult when there are calls made on the floor that you don't quite understand. You just have to do the best you can. Being a former player, Tim probably might interject more of that into me doing the actual play-by-play, but just see how it goes.
Do you have to do preparation on the referees, knowing it's like an umpire? This umpire has a wide strike zone. This NBA official likes to call hand check. Do you do preparation on referees, or it's just, nope, Brad, that's too much?
You know, that's interesting because I know the baseball guys do. I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just look at the three referees that are going to come out. They're going to call the game. It's a very, very difficult game to call because of the speed, and it's becoming more difficult because the tempo of the game has increased for every team. So it's a very, very difficult team, a very, very difficult game to referee. I think the officials do the best they can. It's very easy for broadcasters to be overcritical, and I'm sure in my early years I was probably more critical than I should have been because it is an emotional game.
Sure.
Anymore, I pretty much accept it. If there is a call that is missed and I feel that it has an effect on the game, then I think as a reporter I'm obligated to report that. If it's just a quick call that is made, not an interpretation of a rule, I probably would roll along with that and just say, hey, the officials are making the calls that they see. But no, getting back to your original question, Brad, no, I don't look at officials saying, oh, he makes these calls, doesn't make those calls. I don't think that's important to the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes, and as I said, possibly my approach has changed since it did in the early years, that I don't think the listener obviously wants to hear you being critical of officials throughout the ball game. You certainly can overdo it. As I said, it's a tough game to officiate. We have the best referees available, and let's just play the game.
You mentioned the word reporter earlier, Al, and I really respect that because when I hear you do a game, I can't tell if a team is winning or losing if I'm catching you in the second or third quarter. I can kind of hear in your voice when it gets close to crunch time, the enthusiasm level doesn't change dramatically, but I can tell, okay, the Suns are winning just hearing it in Al's voice, but you're just there to report it. And when you're in a space like you are right now, or the last several years where the team has not won much more than they've lost, I don't hear you sound much different at all. And how do you go about that process?
Well, you know, I still love the game, Brad, and I just enjoy the competition in the game. As you know, as what I've always said about the NBA, what other sport can you see where there's a great play every 24 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy the game, and I've always had the philosophy as a broadcaster, quite obviously. I work for the Phoenix Suns. I've done the Phoenix Suns games for 45 years. I'm going to be a lot happier if the Suns are playing well.
Sure.
And if they win the game. But I'm certainly not going to downgrade the opposition. There's so many great players, so many great teams in the NBA. that you can't sugarcoat that. And I have always felt I am going to give the opposition the credit they deserve, and I have certainly attempted to do that through the years. And with the Suns not having great years the last few years, I think perhaps you do concentrate on how the game is being played, how good perhaps the opposition is, what great three-point shooters they might have that are influencing the game, and I think that's all part of it. But through the years, my philosophy has always been that you cannot interpret the opposition. When the opposition is playing great and the Suns are playing poorly, you can't hide that. The listeners, the fans are so much more informed on every part of the game. You can't hide things. You have to be factual, and I certainly have tried to do that through the years, and part of that is certainly giving credit to the opposition.
How do you handle a player, whether it be with the Suns or opposition, but primarily with the Suns, or maybe it's someone within the organization, have they ever once come to you and said, I didn't agree with what you said about me or how you critiqued my play through 45 years? Have you had that player?
I've never had that happen.
Wow.
I've never had that happen. And it's kind of interesting, and I just tell you this story.
Sure.
As you know, Isaiah Thomas was signed by the Suns from Sacramento and then was traded to Boston, and we all know he's become an all-star since he went there. And when he was traded, he was kind of underplayed, I think, by the Suns and the fans. But he was one of very few players. He came to me after the trade was announced, and he said, Al, he said, I know that since I've been here with the Suns, you've said a lot of good positive things about me and my game. He said, I just want you to know how much as a player I appreciate that. And those are the things that you never do forget.
Mm.
And it happens occasionally, but I never have had a player come to me complaining about how I had interpreted his play. Because I think most guys realize that through the years, I've always had great respect for the players, for the Suns, obviously, and for the opposition also. And I would never do anything to embarrass a player. Now, if a player's not having a good game, if he's missing his shots, again, those are things you can't change. That's part of the game.
Sure.
And you can't misinterpret that either. But, no, I never have had a player come to me with any complaints.
Curious, Adam Silver talked about how he does not like the one-and-done rule. And this is a little bit away from process, but I think it does factor into this conversation because young players come in and they may not be as skilled. Do you agree with where he sees one-and-dones not being good for the NBA?
Oh, definitely. No one likes the one-and-done. The fans don't like it. The colleges don't like it. The players don't like it. And I don't understand why the NBA Players Association still is in favor of it. It has changed the game dramatically. It's changed the college game as well as the NBA game. I don't know anyone that likes it. But, you know, when you take things into court and deny a player the right to go out and make a living, and we see all the young players that are signed by hockey teams, by baseball teams, I guess eventually it had to happen in the NBA. But it's obviously changed the game, and I am not in favor of it at all.
I mentioned earlier you've done hockey. You did the Roadrunners, for those not aware, correct?
That's correct.
And you did the Diamondbacks, did some
correct.
Diamondback games.
Did Arizona State football and basketball.
Are there things you want to do outside of NBA at this point of your career?
Right now, at this point of my career, I'm just interested in having a good game, watching a good performance, and going out and having a good meal. That's about all it is right now, Brad.
And you know all the good spots through the years.
I know the good spots. Yeah, you're right. No question about it. I have to admit to you that my career has been much larger than I would ever have dreamed.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fantastic. And to think, as I said at the end, that I have had 45 great years with the Suns in the NBA is almost unbelievable. You know, I started in small-town radio in Iowa and kept working, and to achieve what I have is something I'm I'm very thankful for it. It's been a great ride, and it's continuing.
Yeah, a couple other questions, and I appreciate all your time today on this. Who do you hear today as a young broadcaster or just in general that you listen to and you really admire? It doesn't have to be in Phoenix, or it could be in Phoenix or across the country. Who do you really admire listening to or enjoy listening to?
Well, you know, I like probably the older guys. Obviously, when you're talking baseball, Vin Scully was one of the best in a class by himself. Al Michaels, who I knew when he was a student at Arizona State University, certainly has become one of the premier broadcasters in the entire industry. And I got a kick out of Al Michaels in his recent book. He mentioned me because he said he had applied for the Phoenix Suns job, and I got it, and I'm still there. But those are two of the best. And then Kevin Harlan, who I've known since he started in the business in Kansas City, and to see how Kevin has progressed and now becoming one of the busiest and one of the best play-by-play announcers, he's someone that I certainly do enjoy. And also, I would have to mention Marv Albert's son.
Steve Albert.
You know, we have his brother Steve here.
You have Steve there. Kenny Albert.
Yes, Marv Albert's son, Kenny. I think has become a very versatile broadcaster, and I think he does an excellent job. I love the way he does hockey, and he does an excellent job in whatever he does. He's just a very, very broad, talented broadcaster, and I think Kenny Albert is certainly one of the best.
If you're standing in a room in front of 50 advanced students at Arizona State University or at any college that are juniors and seniors that want to be Al McCoy or just want to go be in the business of play-by-play broadcasting, not just broadcasting, but play-by-play broadcasting, what advice would you give them?
Well, you know, it's difficult for a young broadcaster to get experience doing play-by-play. And obviously that's the most important thing. I will tell these students, if you have a recorder, go to a game, set up in the stands and practice and pretend you're doing play-by-play on radio. Try and do that. And then, you know, my background, as I mentioned, started in small-town radio in Iowa, where I got the experience that I needed doing play-by-play of all sports. Unfortunately, a lot of your college students don't want to go to those small towns initially, but if you need play-by-play experience, that's really what you have to do. And there are positions in Phoenix, certainly Globe Miami, Yuma, Prescott, Flagstaff, a lot of places that perhaps would have an opportunity to get play-by-play experience. But I think you have to go to a small, medium market to get that play-by-play experience.
Do they have to know how to sell and market and do 20 different things for an organization? Many kids that I talked to, or students I talked to, I shouldn't say kids, students I talked to say, I just want to go be a play-by-play voice.
Well, you have to do things along the line that you probably hadn't planned on. And in my case, I mean, from the very beginning, sports and play-by-play sports was my ultimate goal. But I did a lot of things in between. As you know, I worked as a disc jockey.
Yep.
I did news, sports. I was involved in sales and production. You do what you have to do to try and reach the ultimate goal. So I think you have to have a background and experience that is varied, and it certainly helps you along the way, no question about it.
A couple other questions, and they'll be brief. Do you have anybody that listens to you still and gives you feedback? Do you ask people for feedback still at the stage of your Hall of Fame broadcaster? Do you need that at this point?
Well, I think we always do, but I record every one of my games, and I don't listen to everyone in their entirety, but I have them on my iPhone, and when I'm driving around Phoenix, I'm listening. Because I always want to make sure that I'm still on top of my game, that I'm still accurate in my calls. So, and I do talk with other people from time to time. other broadcasters around the NBA that are longtime friends of mine that also hear my games. But as I said, I think if I'm losing it, I might be the first one to acknowledge that, because I do record and try and listen to every game, at least parts of it.
That's got to be a hard conversation with some of those people, I would think, or perhaps not. Maybe it's easy.
Well, it is, because, you know, I have a lot of very good friends that broadcast for other teams, and we listen and talk about our respective games from time to time, and usually it's a pretty good sounding board.
Before I let you go, then, tomorrow, Friday night, what are you expecting Friday night to be like, Al? I mean, you're going to have a game. Russell Westbrook's in the building. They're supposed to have 12 minutes. I can't imagine your halftime, or 15 minutes. I can't imagine that it's going to be running within time. What are you expecting Friday night to be like, Al?
Well, when they made the announcement that I was going to be privileged to be in the Suns Ring of Honor, I have to tell you, it was a shock. It really was. I hadn't anticipated it. And I really don't know what to expect on Friday night. Maybe one of the things I'm going to enjoy the most is all six of my grandkids are coming, and most of them are from out of state, and I'm looking forward to having them all here. And whatever transpires, it'll be a memorable evening, I'm sure. The ironic part about it is, as you know, Brad, the previous 14, I have hosted their inductions for all of them. So it will be a little different experience for me on Friday night. But obviously, I am looking forward to it.
Do you know who's going to host?
I do not.
It'll be fun. I will be there Friday night. Very much looking forward to it. And I appreciate you being on this week's Arizona Media Podcast. Congratulations on going in the Ring of Honor, Al.
Brad, it's always a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you.
There's Al McCoy, Hall of Fame broadcaster, and that is this week's Arizona Media Podcast.